Chapter 21. This, John assumes, isn't how a Mandalorian wedding is supposed to go. "Vagrant," Nol shouts, and it's a warning, but John is already moving, twisting hard and throwing the woman who leaps at him over his shoulder. The little blonde girl cries out at the same time, a man in armor grabbing her by the hair and hauling her back. And John throws himself forward, straight through the fighting pair in front of him, with a prickling wash of indistinction, re-solidifying just in time to sever the man's arm with a blow. With a cry, the girl tumbles down, only for invisible hands to catch her. A bare instant later, Faye is there, dragging the girl up onto her hip and raising a hand, her expression tight and furious. The wounded man jerks, stumbles, and collapses with a wail, and Faye pulls the girl in tight, then glances at John. "Her sister," she starts, and then, sharp, "John, their father." John turns, moves without hesitation because he can feel the force through Faye, trusts it completely, reaches one fractured moment of perfect calm and concentration, and space folds. There's a blow from the left, and John shoves the man in red back, doesn't have time to dodge when there are attackers ahead and beside. It takes a fraction of a second to recognize which will do more damage, and then John grits his teeth, lets the blaster bolt take him in the shoulder as he cuts through a vibrosword with one sharp slash. The woman in front of him shouts even as his arm goes dead, and John lunges right for her, slams her down with a crack of metal, then rises with a whirl to face the other man. The clan leader they were looking to stab cries out a warning, but John catches a blaster bolt, another, slashes a hand to throw them aside, and grabs for his injured arm. The fine silk took most of the shot, and John heals himself with a pass of his hand, twists his lightsaber around, lashes out. The attacker tries to throw himself back, but John takes him through the chest, turns, grabs the man the attacker was aiming for. "They were trying to take your daughter," he says, and the man's eyes widen. He jerks, pulling away, and John shoves him in the direction of Faye, but he hesitates. "My other daughter," he says, desperate. "She's redheaded, wearing blue. I'll find her," John promises, and feels Faye's brush against his thoughts. Just for an instant, the world hums, the force pulsing through John like it did when Faye healed him, one vast glimpse of light and peace and connection. The girl. Faye sees her, so John does too, and he lets Faye feel his flicker of thanks even as he breathes out, lifts a hand. Green light whirls, and he drops out of empty space, goes through a pair of men just snatching up the redheaded girl. A thrown elbow knocks one man's helmet sideways with a thud, and with a cry, the girl kicks hard, sinks her teeth down into the gloved hand over her mouth with a vengeance. Her captor yells, recoiling, and John grabs the girl, hauls her up onto his shoulders, and takes both men's heads with a sweeping twist of his blade. "JT," the girl says, an accusation. But she grabs for John, hangs on as he hurls himself up, gets a boot on the wall and redirects off of it, flipping over and then dropping straight down. "Hang on," he warns her, and too risky to teleport with another person, even after the time with the assassin, because he didn't care what happened to that intruder, but he's not about to hurt an innocent child. They're all the way across the battlefield from Faye and the girl's sister, though, and John grits his teeth, blocks a blaster bolt, another, and then a surge of fire sweeps through the space in front of him, curls tight around unfamiliar Mandalorians, and sends them scattering with screams. John doesn't waste time. He surges through the gap, shoving a sense of gratitude at Nol as she grabs for a man wrestling with Miles. Her vicious cheer echoes back, and John grabs the little girl around the waist, jumps with the force to carry him high, and feels the child's jerk. "Fire," she warns, and John twists hard in midair, blocks a bolt and sends it back with a grunt, and then tumbles over, lands boots first on the helmet of a heavily armored enemy, and redirects as the man crumples with a cry. One last hard leap carries him to the clear space around Faye, and he lands hard in a crouch, dips, and drops the redheaded girl on her feet. "Bo!" the blonde girl cries, reaching for her, and Faye lets her down, even as a flick of her fingers slams a shattered table into a woman trying to rush them. "Prompt as ever, Master Antilles," she says, mild, and John catches his breath, rises. "You're all right," he asks the redheaded girl, who nods, looking up at him with wide eyes as her sister clings to her. It makes John smile a little, and he raises a hand, concentrating for a brief moment. The ivy growing up the wall twists, thick stems curling around each other, bending and writhing and creaking as they grow, until they pull away from the stone, a dark space within the tangle of them. "Hide there for now," he tells them. "Master Faye will keep you safe." The redhead hesitates, but her sister tugs at her, pulling her towards the spot, and after a second, she says quickly, "Thank you, JT," then hurries and scrambles after the blonde. John blinks, startled, but ignores the flicker of uncertainty that rises, straightens instead, glancing at Faye, and the bodies scattered on the ground around her, at the girl's father as he fights off another man with a broken table leg, and turns and looks for Jaster. "By the trees," Faye says, a light touch on his elbow vanishing the last traces of pain from the blaster wound. John takes a breath, turns to look and spots Dooku and Nico on either side of Jaster, bickering as they fight. Jaster is being hemmed in, most of the forces concentrating on him, and he's in danger in a way that makes John's heart clench, but that's not where John needs to be right now. He can feel it like a tug, pure instinct. The wave of enemies is forming, rising, but it hasn't flooded forward yet, and John needs to stop it before it can, or Jaster will be overwhelmed. "You don't kill," he says to Faye, who smiles, perfectly peaceful and steady, with bodies scattered still breathing around her feet. "I don't," she confirms, "but that doesn't mean I'm useless." John snorts, because he's seen that very clearly. He scans the fight, something prickling down his spine, and his gaze catches on a woman right in the thick of things. Her head keeps turning, like she's making the same scan of the battlefield, and John can't pick out intent with so many people feeling pain and anger and fear, but he can recognize someone on comms giving orders. A commander of some sort, and capturing her won't mean the fight ends, but it will help. "The woman with the cloth covering her armor," he says, and Faye's gaze drops right to her before she nods. "I'll leave her to you," she promises, and John doesn't hesitate. He surges forward, not bothering to fold space or aim for the element of surprise. There's no use when he wants to disrupt a push. Instead, he throws himself headlong into the press, right where the bodies are thickest, and cuts through the first rank without hesitation. Behind him, there's a whirl of cream cloth, and Faye moves like a dancer through blaster bolts, debris and stones and dropped weapons whirling around her as she follows. John doesn't look back, doesn't look forward. It's just motion and reaction and instinct, and this, of all things he understands, was raised on. He ducks a sword, slides around a kick, drops a man with a bandolier of grenades and leaps over him, lightsaber already raised to block a blow before it starts to fall. Focus, and it's like meditation, like opening himself up to the Force until nothing exists but this. Nothing but the next step, the falling blows, the bodies moving in a way he can see. They're rolling rocks, slow and heavy, and John whirls through them like a tide, leaving bodies behind him. He can feel the exact moment the commander notices that she's in danger. There's a snap surge of fear, followed by sharp fury, and a half dozen more bodies close in fast, two flyers dropping down in front of John, and four more shoving forward. One of them lunges, but John is already leaping, twisting over the man's head as a blaster bolt skims his arm, coming down right in the middle of the four Mandalorians as one swings hard for his neck. John ducks, rolls, rises with his lightsaber raised to cut through a sword, With a crackling hiss, the green blade shorts out as it meets the metal, and the woman makes a vicious, victorious sound. Somewhere beyond the knot of bodies, there's a cry, Jaster's voice, but John can't spare a glance for him. He ducks, feels a hand grab his robe, and throws himself back. The man behind him goes down, and John flips free, takes one fractured second to breathe, and slams a hand down on the torn-up grass. This garden is familiar after the weeks he's spent here. John's walked through it, meditated in it, slept here, and used the force here. All it takes is one surge of will, one moment of intent, and the ground trembles. John, Fay warns, but John lashes out, catches a blaster bolt, another, then rises. Under his feet, the flowering vines Jaster's people planted everywhere for the wedding, the vines that have been sending out creepers through the soft earth since the moment they were placed in the ground, erupt like a nest of snakes, burying all the bodies between John and the commander. They scream as they go down, and John lets himself slide one step sideways into indistinction, steps forward right through the tangle of limbs and thick, woody trunks. He emerges on the other side, gaze fixed on the commander as she backpedals, blaster up and firing. None of the shots hit, scattering with a thought and a flick of John's fingers, and John steps out into cleared space, then meets her eyes through the dark slash of her visor. "Surrender," he says quietly, and the woman makes a sound of frustration, takes two long steps back. Her helmet turns, just slightly, and John looks that way as well, lets a vibrosword cut down right through him like he's a ghost. The man wielding it slams back into an overturned table, and then goes down in a heap, and John glances back at the woman. "Call this off," he warns her, and feels frustration bubbling up, knife-edged. "Go to hell," the woman snaps, and lunges. John whirls one step to the side, leaps the stab of a knife, lands behind her. He sweeps her feet out from under her, slams her down into the ground, and raises a hand, and grasping vines rise, twist tight around her limbs, pin her to the earth. She struggles, swearing, but John reaches down, gets a hold of the dark cloth covering her breastplate, and pulls it away. Scored into the metal, deliberate and proud, is the same symbol that was on the assassin's cheek, that was painted on the walls of the tunnels under the compound. Two parallel lines running horizontally, and a third slanting down through them. John stares down at the mark for a moment, then raises his head, tips a hand. The woman's helmet tumbles away, and she curses, snarls at him, tries to grab for it, but can't. John doesn't know her face, but someone will. If she has enough authority to be in charge of this attack, there's no way Jaster or Miles won't know her. Satisfied, he straightens up, turns, and finds Fay just approaching with light steps, a teenage girl in golden armor right beside her, armed and wary. The girl takes one look at the woman and stops short, surprise and then dismay rising, rapid assessment tumbling right after. "Governor Cast," she says, and there's a thread of anger to it. "What's the meaning of this?" Cast makes a derisive sound, wrenching the vines again even though she can't get any leverage. "Traitor," she snaps, and Fay hums, leaning down over her. Her long brown hair sways, and her eyes are a little distant, considering. "You have a deal with the Death Watch," she says, and Cast stiffens, fury flashing across her face. "What?" the girl asks, alarmed. "But Tor didn't tell me anything about—" She breaks off, expression twisting, mouth compressing into a thin line, and takes a deliberate breath. Fay casts her a look, then glances up at John. "I'll stay and guard her," she says. "I'm sure Countess Wren will assist me, since I don't carry a lightsaber. You should save the Mandalore from Nico and Dooku." "Not the Death Watch," John asks, amused, but he's already turning, looking towards where Jaster is grappling with a Trandoshan Mandalorian as Miles and Nol struggle with a pair of flyers. Nico and Dooku are holding off a squad just pushing out of the depths of the garden, and neither of them look nearly as put together as they did when they first arrived. "I'm sure he has experience handling the Death Watch," Fay says mildly, and Ursa grimaces, looks away. I didn't know there was going to be an attack, she says. But we're the Death Watch. Clan Ren supplies a large number of its fighters. Tor would have told us. John looks at her for a moment, then back towards Jaster, feeling something curl in the pit of his stomach. Some people just see others as tools, he says quietly. Arla was Tor's tool, too. Ursa pauses, caught off guard, and some of the color drains out of her face, but John doesn't wait to hear her response. He heads for where Django and Silas are being overwhelmed as they try to bar the main door, Arla guarding their backs as best as she can. There are more pressing things to focus on right now. You, Dooku says, fury vibrating through his voice as he pins a folded scrap of someone's cape to a gushing wound, are a complete and utter fool, Niko Dyeth. I believe you're mispronouncing thank you, Niko says dryly. That's understandable. I'm sure it's outside of your standard vocabulary. John crouches down beside Niko, catching his shoulder before he can wave Dooku off and rise. Faye should be here in a moment, he tells Dooku quietly. Dooku grimaces, but he doesn't pull away. I could have blocked that blow, he tells Niko, pointed. There was no need to sacrifice your own body. You're not doing anything else with my body, so I may as well put it to some sort of use, Niko retorts, and Dooku freezes like he just got hit with a stunner. Niko takes one look at his expression and rolls his eyes skyward, then turns his attention to John, gaze narrowing. And you? After that comm call, I expected to find you strung up from a torture device in a basement somewhere. What in the light of the Force were you thinking, not even contacting us again? We thought you'd been murdered by Governor Cast. John blinks, entirely caught off guard, and looks from Niko to Dooku, then back. Murdered? He repeats, bewildered. Why? Dooku gives him a long, pointed look, then flicks a glance up towards an approaching shadow. You dropped our comm call in quite a rush after a Mandalorian started yelling about Jedi. We assumed the worst, and the Mandalore's reputation was little comfort in light of that. There's a quiet, rueful breath, and Jaster sinks down on one knee beside John, surveying Niko's wound. A mercenary's honor means so little to you, he asks, and John tries not to flush and fails as Jaster's hand slides over his, lacing their fingers together. Niko makes a rude sound. I trust Hutts to always look for their profit, and I trust Mandalorians to always serve their people's interests, he says pointedly. And Jedi are traditional enemies, in your point of view. It's logical to be concerned for one Jedi on his own in the midst of Mandalorians. He pauses, arching a brow at John, and says, though it seems our worry was rather misplaced. I'm not a prisoner, John says, maybe a little belatedly. He squeezes Jaster's hand, then glances up and asks, Arla, Django? Fine, Jaster says, and inclines his head to Faye as she approaches. Having a Jedi healer here kept casualties to a minimum, thankfully. We would have been far worse off without Master Faye. Faye bows her head in return. I'm glad I could be of assistance, Mandalore, she says, and then tells Dooku, lift your hands. I'm not healing both of you at once unless you want your souls stitched together. Dooku, his ears red, jerks his scrap of cloth away from Niko's shoulder. Instantly, Niko groans, and Dooku tenses, grabs for his good arm. Niko, you fool, hold still! This feels familiar, Jaster says, faintly dry, and rises, then offers John a hand up. I feel the need to look for Miles for some reason. John ducks his head, hiding a smile, and lets Jaster pull him to his feet. He was near Null, I believe, Faye says, most of her attention on Niko as she tugs his robes away from the bleeding wound. You should speak with her too, John. We both thought you were a prisoner as well. Her glance up at Jaster is sharp, for all her expression is steady. Reassure her that you aren't being blackmailed into serving the Mandalore. Well, Niko says with equanimity, at least we weren't the only ones leaping to incorrect conclusions. Dooku, if your hand goes an inch lower, I'm going to take it as an invitation. You've never recognized a single invitation in the last 4 years. Why on earth would you start now? Dooku asks, exasperated, and kisses him like he's proving a point. Faye rolls her eyes and ignores them, hands bleeding with green light as she heals Niko's shoulder. I'm all right, she tells John. Tell me when it's time for the wedding. As soon as I can find my children and my aide, Jaster says, amused, and pulls John away, though his smile flickers into something grimmer a moment later. We've caught all of Cast's men and cleared the tunnels they used to access the compound. It seems Cast's family used to own this place, though not openly. He pauses for a moment, then sighs, raking a hand through his hair. I knew Tor was going to try something, but this wasn't what I expected. Concord Dawn has been neutral in the war for years. John can't help the urge to slide a thumb beneath the edge of Jaster's gauntlet to find the warm skin beneath. Jaster's pulse is steady, strong, and John glances at his face, then over to where Aga Cast is sitting with several of her soldiers, surrounded by true Mandalorians with heavy blasters. She made a deal in secret, he said quietly. You were too great a target for Tor to pass up. Jaster snorts, turning his hand to lace his fingers with John's, then tugging him in step, right up against his side. Her and all those other hidebound bastards who refused to acknowledge me without the Darksaber, he says grimly. Without them, this war would have been over years ago. He sighs, sweeping a thumb over John's knuckles, and says, Well, at the very least, Miles is now going to single-handedly murder his way through the entirety of Death Watch as revenge for ruining the wedding, so we'll have far less to worry about soon. John can't hide his smile quite so well without his hair loose, but the habit is still there. I'm sure he'll be very successful. A hand cups his cheek, tips his head up, and when John raises his eyes, Jaster is smiling at him, small and soft and warm. Warm enough to make it feel as if there's sunlight threaded through John's veins. I'll admit, Jaster says, soft, all I care about is signing the marriage certificate. Your name beside mine is all I require. He could be talking about the politics, the arrangement they have, the debt. He's not, though, and John knows that without hesitation. He smiles back, just a little, and tips his face into Jaster's touch, the warm, calloused palm that's just as warm as his eyes. You didn't get hurt, did you? John manages to ask, even though what he wants is to press himself up against Jaster and kiss him. Jaster shakes his head, but the drift of his gaze down to John's mouth makes it clear that John isn't the only one feeling that urge. It was close, I'll admit, he says, low. I kept getting distracted by the fact that my fiancé is apparently incredibly skilled, and I hadn't realized. Oh, John thinks, and almost wants to laugh. Jaster still thinks he's a knight, and, well, their first meeting came when John was half-dead from taking on Montross. It's no wonder John being competent was surprising. I wasn't injured for this fight, he says, keeping it mild, and Jaster snorts. That's quite the understatement, he says, dry, leans in, tugging John down a little to press their foreheads together, and cups his cheek, smoothing a thumb across his cheekbone. You were magnificent, he says, a bare murmur that makes John shiver. It made me very eager for our honeymoon. Well, aren't you cute, Noel says, and John twitches hard, turns sharply. Noel smirks at him, sleeveless tunic vaguely scorched and mane tangled, though she looks otherwise unhurt and pleased about it. You know, if I'd seen you cuddling like this, or if you hadn't been so squirrely about telling me what was going on with you in the Mandos, I might not have assumed we needed to stage a rescue in the middle of a wedding. John flushes, though he can't quite bring himself to pull away from Jaster. I didn't know you were worried, he mutters, looking away. Noel snorts. I figured that out about the time I started hearing the screams, she says, and slants a look at Jaster. Mandalore, I'd say sorry for crashing your party. Don't be, Jaster says, and offers her his hand without hesitation. Your help was most appreciated, Master Venari, and the day may have been lost without the assistance the four of you provided. Noel raises a brow, but she readily clasps forearms with Jaster, gripped tight as her fur ripples with amusement. I'll admit it's nice to be at a wedding that's not boring for once, she says, grinning. Does the council know about this, Vagrant? John doesn't quite disappear into the collar of his robe, but the urge is very strong. Not yet? You and Faye may as well be allergic to Coruscant, Noel says, rolling her eyes. I didn't realize there was another Jedi like her. Mandalorian weddings need witnesses, right? Got someone to stand for you. John hesitates, glancing at Jaster, who immediately tips his head in agreement. It makes John smile, just a little, and he turns to fully face Noel and bows. Master Venari, would you stand with me when we exchange vows? There's a pause, then a huff. A rough hand ruffles John's hair lightly, and Noel says, warm, sure, kid, I'd be honored, and it will probably give the council ulcers, which is always a plus. Jaster chuckles. Then all I need is Django and Arla, he says, and Miles, who has the documents. The cute Spitfire, who looks like he's having a crisis, Noel asks, cocking her head. She turns, tipping her chin towards one of the garden benches. Faye patched him up earlier. I was about to go offer to comfort him. Her grin is all intent, sharp enough to make John flush. Want me to go get him? Jaster coughs desperately to hide a laugh, ducking his head and turning away. He waves Noel off, and with a hum, she turns, sauntering across the garden to lean down, murmuring something to Miles. Miles, for his part, raises his head slowly, giving her a startled look, and John turns away to help Jaster pull himself back together. Spitfire, Jaster wheezes, and John huffs and tugs him upright, though he's smiling too. It's a compliment from Noel, he says. She once defeated a fleet of Wookiee bandits and saved all of Bothan's space. I saw her breathing fire, Jaster allows, still sounding inordinately amused and smug. If I hope that she eats Miles alive, is that being a good friend or a terrible one? John carefully sidesteps that particular question. I think Arla and Django are there, he says instead, and Jaster turns, then snorts. All that work prying you out of your armor so we could get it polished just for this, he says, pitch to Carrie. Arla makes a rude gesture at him, then immediately ruins it by thumping straight into him and wrapping him up in a hug. Old man, she says. It was Zarin who put her back into it. Don't talk like you did all the work. Jaster smiles, curling an arm around her and pressing their temples together. A joint effort, he amends, and looks Django up and down. You didn't fall in the river, I see. Arla crashed, Django says immediately, smirking. Got knocked out of the air by a sniper. I fished her out before she could sink. Ow! Arla huffs, withdrawing her fist from the top of his head. We got Adonai another blaster, she says. His malfunctioned halfway through the fight. That kid of his is cute. She tried to bite me when I went to pull them out of their hiding spot. John blinks, but given what he saw of Bo-Katan, that seems perfectly reasonable. The redhead? Yeah, Arla says, pleased. She said she liked my armor. I don't think she's entirely on board with the new Mandalorians just yet. She's six, Django mutters, but raises his hands in surrender when Arla glares at him. Jaster snorts, but tips his head. I believe, he says dryly, that we should get to the point of this wedding before something else happens, children. Arla and Django pull almost identical faces at the term, but Arla turns away, puts her fingers to her lips, and whistles loudly. At the sound, most of the scattered remnants of the crowd look up or rise to their feet, and John scans emotions, faces, and is surprised to find that all of the guests seem more or less cheerful despite the interruption. Mandalorians, Nico says, bemused, as he and Dooku approach, Faye a step behind them. John, are we correct in assuming you truly want this wedding? You're not being coerced. John nods, tightening his grip on Jaster's fingers. Marriage isn't something Jedi do often, and he wouldn't have chosen it without Jaster's deal, but here and now, that doesn't change the fact that he wants it. He wants to stay beside Jaster for however long the universe allows, and this is the way to make that clear. Yes, he says, holding Nico's gaze, and after a long second, Nico inclines his head. Next time, invite us formally, he says, stroking his mustache. Half the fun for you was appearing in a place you weren't invited, Dooku says, dry, and folds his hands into his sleeves. Nico doesn't even try to argue. Faye chuckles. I'll stand as a witness as well, she tells John, and bows to Jaster. If you don't object, Mandalore, I've participated in Mandalorian weddings before. Jaster blinks, pulling back. You have? He asks, startled. I don't recall any records I've seen with you listed, Master Faye. Faye raises a brow, unperturbed. I doubt you would have seen them. The last one was 1,000 years ago, after my master became Mandalore. Jaster freezes, stone still and wide-eyed as he stares at her. Did she break him? Miles asks, approaching with Noel at his side. Did you break him, right before he has to say his vows? I think that should count as an act of war, JT. Amused, John tugs on Jaster's hand. You can ask her questions after the wedding, he says, and Jaster drags his gaze away from Faye with an effort, looking pained. Her master was Tare Vizsla, he says, like a plea, and at Miles' sigh, he huffs. Miles, she has a first-hand account of... You need to put your Vambrace on your husband, Miles tells him, before Tor shows up with another cannon, like on Corda 6. That, at least, makes Jaster wince, and he pulls back, looking up at John. Very well, he says with dignity. John. John hides his smile, tugging his sleeve up. He'd managed not to scratch the Vambrace during the fight, which feels like a sharp relief right now. I'm ready. Jaster smiles back, attention settling. Normally, we would exchange vows in private, he says quietly, but for today, I believe simply getting this done is best. He pauses for a moment, then says, John, I don't know what led me to you in that field, but I've never been so grateful to any force in the galaxy. The Force, John thinks, but he doesn't say that. It happened as it was meant to, he says, soft. Thank you, Jaster. Jaster breathes out, leans in. He presses his forehead to John's again, fingers sliding gently up his arm, and there's a quiet clink of metal. Something cool settles around John's forearm, snaps shut, and John looks down at the sleek black metal engraved with interlocking circles inlaid with gold, Jaster's bare fingers pressed there. When he raises his head, Jaster is watching him closely, and John smiles, tips his head. Even with everyone watching, he kisses Jaster softly, curls his fingers around the heavy flight suit, and fits the Vambrace he had made into the gap in Jaster's armor. The catch in Jaster's breath is obvious. John, he says, startled, and pulls back, raising his arm to look. Freezes, stunned, as green kyber catches the light and glows like a small sun, burning against deeper green metal. A gift, John says, smiling, and when Jaster's hand closes tight around his, he leans in. Jaster kisses him back, deep, fierce, full of relief and joy and delight that hums in John's very bones, and the Kyber sings the same note in the bright afternoon air. End of chapter 21.